We were looking at the sheet of the Ramban yesterday regarding the mitzvah of living in the land of Israel, and he mentioned that there are three basic. So according to the Ramban, there is a chiyuv d'oraisa to live in Eretz Yisrael, but it is subject to three exceptions. And the three exceptions are lisa isha, to get married, lilmo Torah, to learn Torah, or parnassus. So let me just elaborate briefly on each of these three things. Lisa isha in the narrowest context means to find the shidduch, right? You don't have to live in Israel. But some poskim say that under the parameters of lisa isha, you can basically generalize it, this is a very important issue, to the issue of family stability. Meaning to say, even if you have a wife, but if the idea would be that living in Eretz Yisrael would create very much pressures, stresses, it would destroy or make shalom bayis very, very difficult. Now obviously, there's always going to be an adjustment period, so the pshat is you don't run away, you know, the first time you have a problem. But shalom bayis is a factor in deciding to live, or to stay or not stay, because that's nichlal in lisa isha. Lisa isha doesn't just mean to find a marriage partner, but it is nichlal in lisa isha, the concept of shalom bayis, right? So that's why one needs to talk to a rav. One needs to work on this. You can't just say, oh, I want to live in Eretz Yisrael, therefore. One needs a shikul. Now, similarly, this also includes issues of children, because nichlal in a bias is children, and this is a major issue. Again, you guys are too young to be fully involved in all of this, but you know, one of the issues that any family has to contemplate in moving into Eretz Yisrael is the issue of, will there be a proper environment for their children? Now, that may sound ridiculous. What do you mean? In Eretz Yisrael, in Yerushalayim, you're not going to find a proper sviva? Well, but every child is different. Every person is different. And it is forbidden for a parent, because they want to be mekayim the mitzvah of Isha Eretz Yisrael, to do something that potentially could be mashchis their children. So what I'm saying is, the Paiskim tell us that nichlal in the phrase lisa isha are the various factors that are necessary for the stability of a family, including shalom bayis and the children. For example, a very, very controversial, difficult issue is that once children are adolescents, once they're in their teens, to uproot them is not always a pasha thing, to take them from one culture to another culture. In fact, there are parents who made aliyah who actually send their kids back to America to go to school. But once again, is that the best environment to separate them from their parents? These are shailas. These are shailas chacham that a person has to ask. It's not so pashut. Now, similarly, lilmo Torah. Now, a person might say, what do you mean? I'm allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael to learn Torah. What does that mean? In Eretz Yisrael, we have all the yeshivas, people learning Torah. But the short answer is that a person's rebbe, a person's shul, a person's rav, a person forms individual connections with people. You can't always say to a person, oh, you had a reshiva in New York, so you have a reshiva here. Two people are not the same. People are different. And sometimes the unique kesher that a person has may mean that he should stay in Chutz Laaretz. That would depend. As I say, maybe today it's not such a big deal because there's still communication. So it's not like, you know, you're cutting off the contact. But it's still a cheshbon. Those lilmo Torah can include issues of a special kesher with a rav, a rosh yeshiva, even a chavrusa. Also, the question that one has to raise lilmo Torah is like this. This is a very interesting, it's an important shaila. Let's say in America, because I can make more money, so let's say I could get by with working a few hours a day, and I can learn 8 hours a day in America. But if I come to Eretz Yisrael, because you know, I don't make as much money, I have to work 10 hours a day, and I'll only be able to learn an hour or 2 hours, or maybe not at all on a daily basis. So what do I say? Do I say better to live in Eretz Yisrael, to be Mekayim Isha of Eretz Yisrael, to be in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's country, even if my learning will be less? Or do I say, no, if it's a place where I could learn more, that would be machria, the decision. Now, but pashtus, if Chazal say you can leave Eretz Yisrael, lilmaid Torah, it would seem that Talmud Torah has a primacy over each of Eretz Israel. On the other hand, one has to know, because maybe there's a conversion factor. Maybe 1 hour of learning here is equal to 10 hours of learning there, right? So the fact that I go from 10 to 1, maybe it's not a loss, maybe it's a gain. I'm not giving you any terusim. I'm just telling you that the issue of Lilmo Taira is a very complicated issue. It's totally on the unique relationship that you have with the Rav and the Rosh Hashiva. It's totally on the hours of learning that you will either give up or get. Now, Baruch Hashem, very often it's the opposite. Very often people come to Eretz Israel, very often, even if they're working, and they find they have more hours. So Baruch Hashem, very often it works out exactly the opposite. I don't mean to portray to you that it's always going to be in the, less. But sometimes it will be less. Sometimes it will be less. And if it will be less, that's a very, very important shaila. Is it kedai to live here if it will be less, or do I say that the ruchnius as a whole is going to lift me up? And finally, parnasa. This is a big one. And here you really have the maisa satan. This is already where the Yetzer Hara can spoil us. Because I can leave Eretz Yisrael for parnasa. Now, if that means, unless I make the same amount of money I make in America, but you're from living in Eretz Yisrael, then nobody, this country would be empty. Nobody would live in Eretz Yisrael, because you're never going to make the same amount of money, usually. I mean, there are rich people here too, but you usually not. So Elamai, so obviously Chazal were not saying that you're putter from Yishuv Eretz Yisrael unless you have as good a standard of living as you have in America. Obviously, as Chazal say, Eretz Yisrael is niknes b'yisurin, that one is kaina Eretz Yisrael by a certain amount of suffering, and a person has to bedafka, be willing to suffer a certain degree. But there is a gavul, there is a boundary as to how much you should go. Now, it's hard to quantify it, but the basic idea is that you should not, you're not mechuyev to put yourself in an environment where you're essentially living like a beggar. And if it's really that you're not able to support your family without getting stucca, without borrowing money, there's a strong, strong cheshbon that you should not make aliyah under those circumstances. Again, what is the gvul? What is the boundary? One has to talk to a rav about it. I can just give you the extremes. If you could make a living, but it won't be as comfortable as America, you're vadei chayav. That's not a ptur. The other extreme, if you're going to have to beg in the streets, you're vadei patur. Stay in chutz lares. In between is going to be the shaila, how low does it become? Now, of course, let me point out that this idea that you don't come to Eretz Yisrael to be a beggar is presupposing you're not a beggar in chutz lares. Meaning, paradoxically, if you're a beggar in chutz lares, you might as well come here. In other words, you're not mechuyev to be machnis yourself to aliyah to Eretz Yisrael if that will make you a beggar. Okay, but if I'm already a beggar, no, so it's not going to be worse here than there, then I might as well be here. This is where a Jew should be. Yeah.
What if you're living here and someone else is supporting you? What if your father, your mother, someone is supporting you from America?
Well,
I
think not. In other words, within a mashal, I'll give you a mashal. I mean, the Rambam talks about, not Aliyah in this connection, but he talks about Torah. He says a person should not be supported. The Rambam was against kailalim that are supported by the community. A person should not be supported by the community for learning Torah. And yet the Rambam himself was supported for many years by his brother. So within a mishpacha, it was understood that mishpacha takes care of people in the mishpacha. That's not called being nitel staka, although the meiser, they could take it off meiser, but it's called within the mishpacha, people are mechazik each other and the like. So that's not nichon. We're talking about you'd have to stand outside and ask for money, or you'd have to travel to collect money and the like. So these are cheshbonos. But the point basically is like this. So what do you see from this? Even according to the Ramban, it's not a dover muchlet that 100% you have to be here. But it is important that according to the Ramban, unless you have heterim, you are chayef to be here. And the big shanda, the avla of even American B'nai Torah, is that they often do not ask the question. They just assume, I'm happy in Brooklyn, I'm happy in Lakewood, I'm happy in Muncie, I'm happy in Baltimore. And they don't even ask themselves, why am I not living in Eretz Yisrael? You have to ask yourself, And then maybe there's a teretz, maybe there isn't. Maybe there's a heter, maybe there isn't. And I'm not saying there are no heterim. There are heterim, depending on a person's matzav. But you have to ask the shayla. If you're not even asking the shayla, you're not even thinking of the shayla, then l'chayra, not only is it like a me'isa, it's like a spitting in the matana that Hashem gave us, but according to the Ramban, it might be a bittul of a mitzvah sasei d'oraisa of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, which according to the Gemara is shokol keneged kol ha-mitzvahs. Right? It's mamash equal to all of the mitzvahs, Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And the Gemara says, the Vilna Gaon says, we paskin like the Ramban on that inyan of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Now, let's focus though on the other side of the equation, because remember, all of this is just 50%. This is all Ramban. Rambam does not count Yishuv Eretz Yisrael as a mitzvah. Now, he certainly talks about Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. In Hilchos Melachim, he talks about the greatness of Eretz Yisrael, the beauty of Eretz Yisrael, the spiritual closeness to Hashem. So in many, many ways, maybe it's not such a big nafkamina. Ramban calls it a mitzvah. The Rambam doesn't call it a mitzvah. It's not an obligation, but it's still a tremendous, tremendous zechus. But it's interesting that why does the Rambam not count it as a mitzvah? See, it's always hard to know. It's always hard to explain a negative. Why? Because the Ramban tells us it's a mitzvah. We know what the Ramban says. The Rambam just doesn't count it. So why doesn't he count it? So here there are two pshatim in the Mefarshim, why the Rambam doesn't count it. Pshat number one, which is the standard Havana in the Rambam, and this is given by a sefer with a very, very strange name. The sefer is called Megillas Esther, but do not confuse this with the biblical book Megillas Esther, but rather one of the Mefarshim on the sefer. In fact, the Iker Perish on the Sefer HaMitzvahs of the Rambam is a sefer. Open up a sefer mitzvahs, you'll see it on the side. It's called Megillas Esther because the Mechaber wrote it in memory of his mother, that was Eli Nishmas' mother, whose name was Esther, so he called it Megillas Esther. So the Megillas Esther standard interpretation is that the Shita Sarambam is that the pasuk in the Torah about conquering the land only applied to that particular generation. It was not a mitzvah for all times, and Memela, it's not Nichnas and Taryag. It was a commandment that Moshe gave to Yoshua ben Nun to conquer the land. It does not refer to us, Bisman Hazeh. Now we'll see that the Megillas Esther has a good riot to that from Gemara and Ksubas, which I will talk about in a moment. But that is the Megillas Esther. So according to the Megillas Esther, there is no, according to the Megillas Esther in the Rambam, there is no chiyuv to live in Eretz Yisrael. Simple, pashut. There is no chiyuv. Is it a good thing? Yeah, but you can weigh it with other things. And in fact, the Nesivos wrote in a letter 250 years ago that the heter of Yidden to remain in the Golos is that they're soimech on the Rambam. Like the Ramban, there's no heter unless you have the particular cases, but we're soimech on the Rambam, Zezuk the Nesivos. But the emes is, in the Dati Leumi community, again, they have Mefarshim, they actually have a punkva keretz, a totally opposite interpretation, as you might expect, in which they say that fundamentally the Rambam is moda to the Ramban, that Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is absolutely a chiv. So the question is, why doesn't the Rambam count it? So listen to what they say. They say a very ingenious interpretation. You know, when the Rambam lists the 613 mitzvos, the Rambam was makdim with 14 rules. How do you count mitzvahs? And this is actually very important. This is the most lumdish part of the Sefer HaMitzvos. The Rambam has to give you klolim. How do you compile a list of 613? Why is there a need for klolim? For a very simple reason. On one hand, we have a Messiah. There are 613 mitzvahs. 365 lo sases, thou shalt not do. And 248 ases, thou shalt do. Right? This is what Chazal say, right? We're makabel this. But if I go through the Chumash and I make a list of every commandment to do something and every commandment not to do something, just go through the Chumash, I'm going to get 5,000. I'm not going to get 613. For example, Hashem tells Avraham, take your son Yitzchak and sacrifice him. That's a commandment. So why don't I count as a positive commandment the mitzvah of Akedas Yitzchak? Or, to give an earlier example, why don't I count as a commandment Hashem's command to Adam Harishon not to eat from the Eitz Hadas? In other words, there has to be some so-called scientific principle as to what do you include in your list and what don't you include in your list. And the Rambam was not the first one who tried to make a list of mitzvahs, but he was the first one to try to develop the klalim of how you count things. Or, to give you another example, let's take something like bringing a korban chatas. Right? The Torah says if you commit certain averos, you have to bring a sin offering. But if you count it, that has many commandments. Bring the offering to the Pesach Ohel Moed, and then it'll be shechted, and then it'll be sprinkled, and then the fats will be burnt on the Mizbeach. Do I count that as 10 mitzvahs? What do I do? So the Rambam develops a lot of klalim, actually 14 klalim. We don't have to go over all of them. One of them is that temporary mitzvahs don't count. That's why we don't count Eitz Hadas, we don't count Mabul. Those were one-time mitzvahs. We don't count, for example, the prohibition against leaving the mun overnight. That was a commandment, but it was not a permanent commandment for future. So that's one klal. Another klal, the Rambam says, is that when the Torah gives you many steps in a process, we only count it as one. So if the Torah says when you bring a korban chatas, there are 20 things that are done, we don't count that as 20 mitzvahs. We don't say there's a mitzvah to shecht a chatas and there's a mitzvah to be zorek the blood of a chatas. No, it's a mitzvah called bringing korban chatas. So you see, based on that, you're cutting down the numbers. Now, you're not changing the mitzvahs, you're just bringing them together. Now, another klal of the Rambam, though, is this. We don't count commandments that say nothing more than keep the whole Torah. For example, throughout the Torah, Hashem says, you shall keep my mitzvos. Ushmartem es mitzvosai. That's a commandment by Hashem. Keep my Torah. So why don't I have in the list of the 613 a commandment that's called keep the Torah? Answer, because keep the Torah is not adding anything beyond the existing commandments. In other words, if Hashem simply says, keep everything I gave you, which he does, the repetition of it is showing us how important it is, but it doesn't count as a separate mitzvah because it's doing nothing more than telling you to keep the other mitzvahs. So any statement by Hashem, keep the Torah, is not counted as a separate mitzvah because it is just telling you to keep the other ones. Okay. So based on this cheshbon, we have a very beautiful idea, which the Ramban himself says, but this is used in the Rambam, not in the Ramban. The Ramban points out, actually even Rashi brings it to Chazal, that when the Jewish people were exiled upon the Korban of the Beis HaMikdash, they were told through the Navi Yirmiyahu that they should continue to keep mitzvot in Chutz La'aretz, so they will remember what to do when they come back to Eretz Yisrael. Keep the mitzvos in Chutz La'aretz, so you will remember what to do when you come back. Now, the Ramban says, what mitzvos are we talking about? We're not talking about Truma, Maaser, and Shemitah, because those mitzvahs we don't keep in Chutz La'aretz. So what are we talking about? We must be talking about Shabbos, Kashrus, Tefillin, Kriya Shema. But then the Ramban asks, but wait a second, I have to keep these mitzvahs because they're not totally Be'aretz. In other words, I don't keep them to be reminded what to do when I get back. I keep them because I have to keep them. So Zakhtar Ramban, an important insight that you see from that interpretation of Chazal, that even the mitzvahs that are not totally be'aretz, their intrinsic chashivas is only in Eretz Yisrael. And Hashem commanded. Now Hashem commanded that I keep them in Chutz La'aretz, but not because they achieve their real spiritual benefit. but only because I should remember what to do when I come back. That's an amazing thing. I would have thought, okay, obviously in Eretz Yisrael I could keep Truma, I could keep Shemitah, okay, even though Shemitah is Drabbanan like most poskim. But putting on tefillin in America should be the same as putting on tefillin in Israel. Tefillin is tefillin. The Ramban says no. That the real spiritual blessing that tefillin brings is only in Eretz Yisrael, and it's not in Chutz Laretz. And why does Hashem tell me to put tefillin on in Chutz Laretz? So I should remember when I come back. Now again, it's a doraisa, chas v'shalom. We're not saying it's a drabanan. It's a chiyuv min ha-Torah to do it. But the real thing that a mitzvah accomplishes, whatever that is only in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so based on this hakdama, the Dati Leumi community has a beautiful pshat in the Rambam. They say, you know why the Rambam doesn't count each of Eretz Yisrael? Not because it's not a mitzvah, but because since none of your mitzvahs really count unless you're in Eretz Yisrael, the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael is the same thing as a statement, keep the Torah. And the Rambam already said, we don't count as a mitzvah a statement to keep the Torah. Yish of Eretz Yisrael is keep the Torah. So Pumpakert, according to this, it's not that the Rambam doesn't consider it a mitzvah. The other way around, it's a mitzvah that is kolel, kol ha-Torah kula, and that's why it's not counted. That's a very, very ingenious interpretation, and of course they use that to say that even like the Rambam, you got to live here. But as I say, the mainstream Havana of the Shitas Rambam is that of the Megillas Esther, that the Rambam holds there is no chiyuv of Yish of Eretz Yisrael bizman hazeh. Now, the raya to this that the Megillas Esther brings is a very, very, very interesting Gemara. And this Gemara is really the makor of Neturei Karta and Satmer. The Satmer Rebbe wrote a whole svarim based on this Gemara. And this is the Gemara at the end of Ksuvas, Taf Kuf Yud Aleph, which is the Gemara about what are called the Shalosh Shavuos, the three oaths. What is this about? This is about in Shir HaShirim, which is a mashal for the love that Hashem has for Am Yisrael and Am Yisrael has for Hashem. So there's a refrain, there's a chorus, there's a pasuk that appears three times in Shir HaShirim. Very enigmatic, very difficult to even translate. Hishpati Eschem B'nais Yerushalayim, that the woman, the princess, who is the Jewish people, calls out to the daughters of Jerusalem. Who are they? Again, but calling out and saying, I make you swear, im ta'iru v'im ta'iru esa'ava, do not stir up or awaken the love, ad she'techpatz, until it is desirous of coming on its own. Do not stir up the love. Do not rock the boat of love. What is it that referring to? And why is it repeated three times? So the Gemara in Kesuvah says the following. At the time of the Chorban Beis HaMikdash, Hashem made the Jewish people make three Shavuos, three oaths. Now this does not mean there was some historical event where we actually, as human beings, swore. But it means in Shemayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu imposed this oath on Am Yisrael. And the three oaths are, oath number one, Shavua, is Lo Yalu Bachayma. Lo Yalu Bachayma literally means they will not climb the wall. Rashi says what that phrase means is that we swore to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we will not try to conquer Eretz Yisrael by military force. We will not try to conquer, and some take it even further, we will not promote the mass emigration of Am Yisrael. Yechidim can go, of course, but we don't call on everybody to go. This is Shavua number one. Shavua number two, Lo Yimredu Ba'umais, we will not rebel against the nations of the world until Mashiach comes. We will not lead revolutions or rebellions. we will be faithful citizens of our host countries. And Shavua number three is we will not try to push the coming of Mashiach before the world is ready for Mashiach. Now, that's also a little enigmatic, but apparently what it means is this. We can certainly try to bring Mashiach by tshuva, by Torah, by Maisim Taivim, by Avas Yisrael. But apparently, mystically and Kabbalistically, there are various formulas by which people could bring Mashiach into the world before the world has reached a spiritual state where it is ready. And that would be like a bright light that's stronger than the kli that holds it. And that would be very, very catastrophic. It would be catastrophic to jump the gun, to bring the Geula before Am Yisrael reaches a madrega that it needs to be in. So essentially, what does these three Shavuos mean? These three Shavuos mean that we're not going to try to establish a state until the coming of Mashiach. We're not going to rebel against the Umos HaOlam. And we're not going to try to even bring Mashiach except through spiritual means and not through mitzvos and not through either politics or through some other Kabbalistic way. Now the Megillas Esther basically says this Gemara is a strong kasha on the Ramban. According to the Ramban, conquering and establishing a state is part of the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And if indeed the Gemara says we're not supposed to establish the state, then mimela, it's not shaykh for there to be a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Now, in theory, if you split up the components, you could say, well, okay, we don't make a state, but there's still a mitzvah to live here. Theoretically, that is possible. But the problem is the Ramban defines everything as part of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, and clearly the statehood issue is precluded by that Gemara. Now, so based on this, the Megillas Esther is mochiach that there is no chiyuv of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Okay. Now the Ramban would simply say to that it's an agadic statement, it's not a halachic statement, and it is said by one rabbi, and you know, there are agadic statements that are lav dafka halacha lemaisa. The Rambam, for example, although the Megillas Esther says the Rambam is relying on that statement, the Rambam nowhere quotes that statement. Right? So, not every statement in Chazal is taken as a halacha psuka. Okay. But now, the final question I want to address is like this. So, the Gemara in Kesuvos at a minimum tells me that there's no mitzvah to establish because we made a shvuah not to establish. So the question is, how are we allowed to establish a state? Now, Neturei Karta and Satmar actually take the position that you're not allowed to establish a political state until the coming of Mashiach. And they base it largely on the Shavua that we made to our Kadosh Baruch Hu. And it's very important to know that the philosophical objection that Satmar and Neturei Karta have to Eretz Yisrael, to Medinat Yisrael, is not because it's a non-religious state. I mean, that's frosting on the cake, and that gives them plenty more argument. But theoretically, the Satmar Rav was absolutely clear, even if every single official in the state of Israel was a Shomer, Torah, Umitzvos, and a Talmud Chacham, and a Tzaddik, and even if every single decision of the government would be al pi halacha, it would be forbidden to have a state because that was a violation of the three Shavuos. Now, the fact that the state is not religious, that makes it a lot worse. But one has to understand that the Yesodistika objection to the notion of a state is not because it's a secular state, even if it would be a religious state, because it's a violation of the Shalosh Shavuos. Now, most of the Torah community, Bizman Hazeh, does not agree with that. Most of the Torah community says, you know, we're unhappy with the secular state, and we'd like to change things, improve things, but Lu Yitzur, the Medina, would be religious, we would be very happy. So how do we deal with the Shelosh Shavuos? So there are two terutzim that if you're not in the Terei Karta, you will give to the Gemara and Ksuvos. Terutz number one is this, that the establishment of the State of Israel was not by a war. In other words, they're learning the prohibition of Lo Yalu B'chayma means you can't conquer Eretz Yisrael by force of arms. But the State of Israel was not established by conquest. What happened basically was that after World War I, what was called Palestine was under the British mandate. Right? Britain, England, controlled Palestine, which included then both modern Eretz Israel and modern State of Israel and Jordan. And in 1918, there was a declaration by the Foreign Office, the Foreign Minister of Great Britain, Stanley Balfour, and this is called the Balfour Declaration, which says that His Majesty's government recognizes the right of Jewish people to have a homeland. And in 1947, there was a United Nations vote that voted by a majority to authorize a Jewish state, which was proclaimed on Yom HaTzmaut. And that night, the night of Yom HaTzmaut, is when five Arab nations started a war. So some people understand it this way. It is true that Jews in Israel have had to fight many, many wars, but there was never a war to conquer Eretz Israel. Rather, Eretz Israel, the State of Israel, was established by international rishus, and the wars were fought as defensive wars against people that tried to destroy it. And therefore, it is not a violation of Lo Yalu B'chayma, because Lo Yalu B'chayma only prohibits a war of territorial aggression to conquer. It does not prohibit a war of defense. So Memela, the establishment of the state, would not be a violation of the Shua. Now, the Megillas Esther still has a raya that we can't say there's a mitzvah to have a state, because then we should be able to, even in other words, it's still a good raya from the Gemara that it's not a mitzvah, because if the Gemara tells me that you're not allowed to wage a war of conquest, that itself tells me it's not a chiyuv. But look, it's also not going to be usher if it's done the way this was done, that way. That is teretz number one. Teretz number two is said in the name of the Or Sameach, although it's not in the Sefer Or Sameach, but it's a letter the Or Sameach wrote. Of course, the Or Sameach was nifter well before 1948, but he wrote the letter after the Balfour Declaration. And he said that if you go weiter in the Gemara says, Klal Yisrael made three oaths, but the Umos HaOlam also made an oath. And the Umos HaOlam made an oath, Lo Yishabdu B'Yisrael Yoser Midai. We are not going to persecute the Jewish people. Yoser Midai. So the Or Sameach says that there's a package deal here. We promise not to conquer Eretz Yisrael. We promise not to rebel against nations. We promise not to try to bring the Mashiach before everybody's ready. We promise to be passive and obedient and not create trouble in exchange for the security and protection that the Umos HaOlam would give us in their countries. But the Umos HaOlam did not live up to their promise. Whether it was the pogroms, whether it was the Holocaust, all of the different Yisurin. So when you have two parties, you sign a lease, you sign a contract, and one party breaks every part of the contract, you are not mechuyev to keep your part of the deal, because the other party didn't keep their part of the deal. So Rav Meir Simcha said, whatever, now this is before the Holocaust, but even in light of things that happened before, the Holocaust is a kal v'chomer, that it would add on to this. That the Ummah, because the Ummos HaOlam did not keep their Shavua to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we ourselves are Pater. Now again, this doesn't negate the Megillas Esther, that you still see that if there's any circumstance, you don't wage war. You see it's not a mitzvah. But L'chol HaPachas, this is why Hakamas HaMedina would be mutter. It would be mutter because the Ummos HaOlam didn't live to their commitment, right? So this is how we understand the Shalosh Shavuos. But be it as it may, Neturei Karta did take the position that Hakamas HaMedina is usher, was usher, even if it's religious, because it violates the Gemara and Ksuvos about establishing a state. The Brisker Rav had a different cheshbon. The Brisker Rav had maybe a simpler cheshbon. The Brisker Rav didn't bring the Gemara and Ksuvos in at all. He just said it was usher. Now this was his cheshbon. His cheshbon was, he felt it was usher to establish a state of Israel, because the establishment of the state would put Jewish lives in danger that would otherwise not be in danger. Because his taina is, again, it's similar to the philosophy of Neturei Karta in the sense that he felt that if we wouldn't establish a state, so the Arabs wouldn't be aggressive in trying to kill us and destroy us. So his taina simply was, what is the heter to establish a state that's going to result in more Jews dying who otherwise wouldn't die? Now again, though, this is not like the Ramban. Like the Ramban, there's a mitzvah. So if there's a mitzvah, you wouldn't have that in cheshbon. Obviously, the Brisker Rav must be going with the Rambam Shita, that there's no mitzvah. But the Brisker Rav did not predicate it on an iser based on the Gemara and Ksuvos. The Brisker Rav predicated it on pikuach nefesh, on nefesh concerns. Okay, so this is the whole issue about state of Israel, not a state of Israel. And then, of course, you do get into secondary issues. That is, given the fact that so many people in the government, maybe most, are either non-religious or anti-religious, are you allowed to connect yourselves to them? Those are like secondary questions that are very, very significant. You know, I'll just mention a little horror about that. You know, everybody knows Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch. Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch became the Rav of a Kehila in Frankfurt, and Germany had been overrun with reform. I mean, it was just unbelievable. Like 95% of the Jews in Germany either converted to Christianity or were reformed. There were virtually no religious Jews left at all. And not only that, but based on the European structure, the reformed communities took over the Jewish institutions. They controlled the money. In other words, if you wanted to open up a frum shul, you couldn't get the money from the community to do it. It's not like America, where everyone raises their own money. In Europe, the structure was that whichever Jewish faction dominated the community controlled all the money in that community as well. So Rav Hirsch was invited, like, by the last 10 religious Jews in Frankfurt, like just a minion, to become their Rav. And he became their Rav, and over 40 years he built the Frankfurt Kehila into a very big Kehila with yeshivos and the like. And he is considered to be the father of kind of bringing back Orthodoxy, bringing back Torah Judaism to Germany. See, we know him because of his beautiful svarim, but you have to realize what an activist he was. I mean, he was someone, he was a koach, he built communities, he was the inspiration to bring Torah back to Germany. And one of his interesting shitas, which put him at disagreement with the Gedolim in Poland and Lithuania, was the shita that's called Torah im Derech Eretz. Because unlike the Litvische Derech and the Hasidische Derech, both Litvaks and Hasidim, which stressed only learning Torah and there was no concept of secular education, the German Orthodoxy of Rav Hirsch did believe that you combine your Torah learning with secular education. And not just at the high school level, but including university and even doctorate. Meaning many rabbis in Germany had PhDs, etc., a whole different mahalach. And there's still a machlokas to this very day. Did Rav Hirsch really think Torah Derech Eretz was the right approach? Or was that the best he could do in Germany? In other words, the Litvische Gedolim like to say, well, listen, of course Rav Hirsch would have preferred everybody learned all day, but he couldn't get away with that in Germany. They were too secular. So we had to give them the most they could take. That's how some people learn. Other diehard yekis say this is a perversion. This was Rav Hirsch's shita. You know, it's a big chutzpah to say he didn't believe what he said. Right, this is a machlokas that still goes on. In fact, Rav Hirsch's kehila, the Frankfurt kehila, is actually the German kehila in Washington Heights. The yeki community of Washington Heights, Kahala Das Yeshurun, is the direct successor, and they're going through that as well. Because the old timers who came after World War II, they were the remnants of that kehila. They believed in university education. That's how they were raised. You're absolutely from, totally from. It's not modern Orthodox. Don't confuse it with modern Orthodox. These are people very, very religious. You know, they will go to minyan 3 times a day. They will learn every day. But they very much believed in secular education and working. But their children go to Lakewood and go to Brisk, you know, their children become... So now Breuer's, it's called Breuer's because Rav Breuer was the first Rav in America from Rav Hirsch's congregation. So now Breuer's is going through a lot of difficulties because some of the kids, they're not kids anymore, they're already older people themselves, disagree with the foundations of Torah and Derech Eretz. Ad kidei kach, that the present Rav of Breuer's, who's, I mean, he's from a Yeki family, but he's also a Lakewood, he was a Lakewood person, spoke at a Malav Malka commemorating Rav Hirsch's Yortzeit. It's a kind of a mudna time to say this, and he says, Rav Hirsch's idea of Torah and Derech Eretz is dead. Can't do it in America anymore. America's too secular. We have to only have Torah learning. So some of the old timers, they're old people, but you know, they could barely walk. But they walk. They wanted to walk out in protest. They said, "Oh, you're insulting Rav Hirsch. Why can you say this?" You know, so they wanted to. You know, they almost tarred and feathered him. At that point. But we know that when we think about Rav Hirsch, if you know about Rav Hirsch, you think about Rav Hirsch as the one that integrated Torah and secular studies. But there's another side of Rav Hirsch. Rav Hirsch was makbid gomor not to have any connection whatsoever with the Reform communities. That although he embraced secular wisdom and secular education, he demanded that the Orthodox kehila take care of everything. In other words, for example, I'll give you an example. One might have thought, okay, I'm not going to work with Reform about a Tikkun Leil Shavuos program, etc. In other words, when it comes to learning and davening, we have to have our own thing. But let's say it would be an issue like public safety, like having, you know, police protection, or it would be like feeding the poor, or tzedakah projects, or the homeless. So you might think, I can work with non-religious Jews. Because, you know, we'll work together on giving tzedakah to poor people. Rav Hirsch had a shita. This is called in German, Ostritz. Ostritz is rip it apart. Rav Hirsch held it was so forbidden to connect yourself to deviant Torah movements. Now again, I don't mean this individually. Certainly Rav Hirsch said, you know, you could be friends with an individual non-religious Jew and try to be makar of him. He wasn't talking about that. But officially, Rav Hirsch said, you cannot give any recognition to the Reform movement. He was makbid gomor that we do not take anything from them, even if it's a matter of, you know, stucca or, you know, even a common cause. You don't work with them. Because if you work with them, you are giving legitimacy to them and giving chashivas to them. This is called the policy of Ostritz. Now, I want to point out, many Rabbanim in Germany, from Rabbanim, disagreed with Rav Hirsch. This is a part of Rav Hirsch that was very controversial. And in fact, in many cities in Germany, there were two Jewish Orthodox kehilas. There was the separatist Ostritz kehila that followed Rav Hirsch. And then there was something called the Gemeinde kehila, which worked with non-religious people on matters of common interest. Now, in Lita, interestingly enough, which actually was much more religious than Germany, Reb Chaim Eiser, Chafetz Chaim, this was not even an issue. It was ungenommen. It was assumed that you worked with non-religious people on matters of common concern. So in Vilna, in Brisk, in Panovich, in Kovna, you worked with non-religious people on, you know, collecting garbage or whatever it would be. So it's interesting that maybe precisely because Germany was so devastated by the reform, Rav Hirsch said we had to separate. Now, why am I giving you this long digression? Number one, it's interesting intrinsically. and it's nogea even today, how to work with reform movements in America and the like. But it's also nogea the issue of Knesset, because putting aside the Neturei Karta issue, that even if it's a religious state, it's also. So let's say we have representatives in the Knesset, right? Degel HaTorah, Aguda, Shas, right? Religious parties in the Knesset. And these religious parties are always working with people who are not religious, not only not religious, but also people who are anti-religious in some ways, trying to compromise. So the truth of the matter is, they're not necessarily following what Rav Hirsch would have said. Rav Hirsch would have said, you can't be mechaber. And that was also what the Satmar Rebbe said. The Satmar Rebbe, in addition to his argument, you can't have a state at all, Satmar Rebbe also said, you can't really work with anti-religious elements. But what is l'maisa happening in Eretz Yisrael, within the Knesset, is following the model of Rav Chaim Eiser and the Chafetz Chaim that said, sometimes you try to work with people, you try to compromise, you try to do things with people. In fact, the mashal the Chafetz Chaim once gave is this. People say, if you work with non-religious leaders, you're giving them legitimacy. So the Chafetz Chaim gave a mashal. He says, if a robber mugs me in the street and puts a knife to my neck, and I try to negotiate with him, am I legitimating the robber, or am I just trying to get out the best that I can? So he says, when you're trying to negotiate that the Knesset shouldn't do more anti-religious legislation, you're not legitimating them, you're just trying to prevent damage, it's damage control. And the Chafetz Chaim said, Memela, in such a situation, you work with whoever you can work with, so things shouldn't be as bad. Okay, so this is a bit of a survey of these different issues. Okay, you have a good Shabbos. Good.